Good afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. That introduction you heard was just that moment of silence.
I forgot to sing. Play my guitar.
Could have hummed a few bars, but yeah, we're better off talking. So, let's see. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
We're no good without the music.
Yeah. What do I do? Annie M, Annie M.
I'm doing this for like nine years. I can't figure out what to do. And we do have a sponsor.
Yes, we do. Our sponsor today is Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is the local John Deere ag and turf dealer for the area. And anything you want in the way of tractors or lawn equipment, go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake, just south of Phil's Propeller. Everybody knows where that is. But yeah, they can take care of you with any of that stuff, parts, service, and they work on all makes. So don't be afraid to take anything else in there. Those guys are pretty knowledgeable. They can work on anything. And you can reach them on the phone at 226-9226 or get them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da! Doesn't help that we've been staying up really late and had a really busy weekend, so now we sound all sleepy. And it's been raining, so you know, can't go wrong there. Got a little sleepiness. We're talking about China today, though. Anything but sleepy. Carrying on our conversation that we had with Dr. Chen and his friend, Mr. Eureka Young, last week, and we thought, you know, it's always bad when we have two people on because, of course, they only get to each do half the talking. So we thought we would have Eureka Young come on this week and give us kind of the rest of the story. He has sent me an updated bio, so a little bit of extra information. You can find everything about the show, I kind of forgot that part, at wethepeopleradio.us, and you have archives of all of our past programs for the last 9 years. I was thinking it was 10, but it's actually 9. We're like 1 year behind how long KCNR has been here.
I thought it was 2009.
Yeah, I guess it was 2010. Go figure. I went back and looked at our own archives. It was pretty easy to figure out if I just looked at the website we maintain. Sad. But anyway, we've got topics going back. We were chatting with someone last night about all these different people that have been on and all the different topics. And it's like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that guy. Oh, I forgot about that lady. Lots of interesting stuff. And most of that information is still relevant because it was not not necessarily local. Most of it's national or worldwide type issues. So we've created tabs at the top, actually.
So you're saying nothing much has changed in the last 9 years?
Well, I mean, information's information, right? So if people come on who are experts in their subject, they're still experts in their subject, and most of that's still there. So we've done I've kind of reorganized the website in the sense that I've made it a little easier for you to find things in the archives if they're under a topic header. So shows we've done on veterans issues, South Africa, China, Islam, environmentalism, marijuana, those I've made tabs for at the top and called out all the programs and listed them there so you don't have to scroll and scroll and scroll. And if you have a particular topic you would like to find and don't want to scroll and scroll, just email us and let us know. You can find all of our contact information at wethepeopleradio.us. So there we go. All the little business end there. So our guest this entire show, actually, is Eureka Young. He came to the United States from China as a college student in 1988. I'm kind of hoping we hear more about that. You know, what happened when you came here? What was it like? What did you think? All that. And then after graduate school, he worked in a Booz Allen Hamilton spinoff whose search engine was deployed among leading enterprises and government agencies. First as a kernel engineer. Good thing we're not talking about that because we don't really know. I don't know about Bill, but I don't really know what that is exactly. And later as an independent consultant, Mr. Young handled high availability and high throughput information needs of clients worldwide, including financial news profiling at Dow Jones, built-in information retrieval features at Adobe Acrobat and Lotus Notes, interest rates announced by Mexico Central Bank and corporate solutions by London-based consulting firm Accenture. So kind of it's a little bit like
Yeah.
It's a little bit like Dr. Chen's bio. You know, you get into the microbiology, it's like, oh, good, we're not talking about that. He continued his career in real-time information processing after the search engine company was acquired by a UK-based Autonomy, which in turn was acquired by HP. Currently works at a major financial services company. Since 2012, Mr. Young has provided research, analysis, and other services to private investors and not-for-profit organizations covering macroeconomic and geopolitical topics in U.S.-China relations. So with all the stuff I'm going to say we hear a lot about China, but we don't hear much detail, and we don't learn a tremendous amount from what we're being told. So last week, if you're interested in the backstory on what is happening in Hong Kong and a little bit more of a in-depth analysis of what's happening there, we did that last week. This is December the 8th, 2019, when we're airing this live. So if you look at December 1st or look under the China tab, you'll find that. So, Eureka.
Hi, good afternoon, Aaron. Good afternoon, Bill.
And you sound really good this week. Yep. It's always hard when we have two people on because one of you is always loud and one of you is always soft, so it's kind of fun. You're the only person on this week. Hey, before we, you know, we always run out of time on all this stuff, but I'm always so curious because your stories are all very different, those of you who have come here from China and stayed here. How did that wind up happening? And I'm always interested to know, when you came here, were you surprised by what it was like here? Like, I know Dr. Chen had said that his story was amazing. He talked about looking up at the moon and realizing that the moon was brighter in other countries and that they had been lying to him in China. Like,
yes, I was surprised. When I was a kid, there were these movies about the Korean War.
Uh-huh.
We call that anti-U.S. war, and in support of North Koreans. In the movies, whenever South Korean army commanders and the U.S. U.S. officials, when they showed up, the lights will turn green. So I thought all the Americans are kind of green-faced. And when I came here, they're all really bright and upbeat. So it was quite different.
We weren't green-faced. Oh, my gosh, how interesting. And so that's pretty funny, actually. So when you came here, why did you come here in 1988? Like, I know you were a college student, but...
Yeah. 1980s was a decade when China was gradually opening up. And it was one of the decades after the communists took over that they started to build up good relationship with the United States. And in 1984, that was my last year in high school, President Ronald Reagan came to visit China. And he delivered a speech in one of the top universities in China. I was studying in Shanghai, and that university, not the one that I later went to, but I think that was the number one university that President Reagan went to. He delivered a speech, and in the speech, he spoke directly to Chinese people about what America stands for and what who Americans are. Like he said, Americans are a fair-minded people, are sympathetic people, are an optimistic people, and after the Second World War, America helped not only rebuild our allies, we helped rebuild our enemies as well, because their people are victims of bad policies and bad governments. So all these are something that I've never heard of. All I knew was, like, America had been bad all along for centuries. It was the number one, like, foreign power that led foreign invasions into China. So since 1984, I started, like, paying more attention to anything related to America. And so with the more I found out about America. And there were every now and then a few Americans in China, although they were not green-faced. So I thought they were more like the exception because they came to China.
Because they didn't get the right tip.
Right. I did meet a few of them because China was opening up. And I came to aspire, like many young young kids back then, we aspired on America's like modern society, America's like leadership in the world. So with that, I applied for college. I transferred my college credits and tried to come to the United States to continue my study here.
Right.
Wow. Well, we've got to take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back. I'm going to go check Bill for green pigment.
Yeah, my makeup is...
I'm not kidding you. That is my favorite question to ask people who have come here to live from China. It's like, what did you think was going to happen, and what does it look like? Because we always get something we don't expect and nothing we could ever guess. The real answers are always better than anything we could make up. Anyway, you are listening to We the People. And you can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
Sonic man out of you. Don't stop me now.
I'm having such a good time. I'm having a ball.
Don't stop me now.
If you wanna have a good time, just give me a call.
Don't stop me now.
I'm having a good time.
Don't stop me
yes,
now.
I'm having a good time. I don't wanna stop at all.
I thought we should play that early because we don't have to stop for like an hour
That's
and 45
right.
minutes. Okay, so our green pigment quotient is very low.
Yep.
Tell me this. When you came here and you... Well, anyway, go back to your story. I have questions.
Yeah. All right. the day that President Reagan arrived in Shanghai, I was preparing for a college enrollment exam. And we went to school for the first half of the day, and the second half was like for home study. So I went home, and I had to... run a household chore to downtown area in Shanghai, and the roads were blocked, and this is usually when there was like foreign dignitaries. There were foreign dignitaries, important like VIPs are visiting. That's when the police would block the road. So I was blocked, and I saw the motorcade. And later I went home. I learned that. I knew that President Reagan was in Beijing, China's capital, and so I thought it could be President Reagan's motorcade, and it turned out it was from news. But we were not, people in China, we were not told that when and where President Reagan was going to deliver a speech. I didn't find out how, the second day I looked at the newspaper, and the talk wasn't like it was in excerpts, and it only published what was good and the thought would help the Chinese government to better advance its agenda rather than the full transcript from U.S. president's speech. So a few weeks later, the high school that I was enrolled in, the English teacher, she is a Christian. And she gave me the full recording of President Reagan's speech, so I listened to it. I couldn't understand each and every word. I was far from understanding all the words. So later on, she found the transcript, so I was able to compare the transcript and listening to the tape. And back then, it was cassette tapes. Slowly, I started to understand the depth and the breadth in President Reagan's speech. So I paid, it was like eye-opening. And when I got enrolled into the college, which was also, which has a long history, was one of the very old colleges in China, there was a good library. So I went into the library, started to dig out more on the United States. And I found a memoir by President Richard Nixon, and in his memoir, he explained when the U.S. president visited countries behind the Iron Curtain, the United States advance team would make arrangements for the president to deliver a speech directly to people behind the Iron Curtain. So it was 1984, and President Reagan followed that protocol. But the communist government had ways to work around that, right? Although they allowed to televise the to broadcast and televise the speech, but they wouldn't tell Chinese people, and they wouldn't offer Chinese interpretation. Very few people in China could understand English.
Oh, no subtitles or anything.
They were trying to reduce the impact, but they still have to meet. They back then, they still honored their kind of international commitment. And things got worse. As you were saying, you have 9-10 years of records. And it is in these past 9-10 years, especially after the year 2009, after the credit crisis in the United States, among the Chinese leadership, they thought now it was China's turn, right, to overtake United States. So a lot of their foreign policies and a lot of their business and trade practices got more and more assertive. So that was like a story that took place later. But back in 1984, so I got enrolled in this college, and I started to learn more about the United States and to learn about media censorship and all that. And but China was still on a good trend. It was opening up, and one of my schoolmates, he was one of the top students in his class. And he was in the same university that I was in. And since it's an old university founded back in 1896, back in 1980s, we call 1896 and 1900, we call that the turn of the century. So it was about 100 years, now nearly 120 years ago. Back then it was close to 100 years ago. So the policy was the university that we went to, was well established. It had connections with the top Chinese leadership, and we had students just like Dr. Chen from another his university. I believe was a top university in China, and in our university, this schoolmate of mine, he was selected by the English department that he went to. He was enrolled in. He was selected to go to Italy to study European culture as well as language. So he went there and he came back, and he was invited to teach, offered the job to teach in our university. That was a very prestigious position. But also, since China was opening up, Coca-Cola came to Shanghai. It was building up a bottling factory, factories, just as we often heard that we're building bottling factories in Mexico. So in mid-1980s, Coca-Cola was building up a factory in China. And so they were trying to recruit my schoolmate. His name, James, he was a few years older than me. And we later came to know each other in Silicon Valley when I worked in the Booz Allen Hamilton spinoff. He was working briefly in Apple as manager for Palm Pilot, late 90s. Yeah, he was the product manager for that. So we got quite close. So he told me his story. So Coca-Cola was trying to recruit him, but the university we went to, Jiao Tong University in Shanghai, refused to release him because they thought we spent money, although it's not the university's money. It's Chinese government's money. But they had everybody in China. Back then, we had a dossier the government compiled on us, where you went, what your political inclination is. It had everything in it. So as long as this dossier wasn't released by the university, he wouldn't be able to go to Coca-Cola. But somehow, Coca-Cola and the municipality, Shanghai is a municipality directly reporting to the central government, they had connections, so they were able to get close to Premier Zhao Ziyang. Premier Zhao was the leader who was toppled in 1989 during the June 4th crackdown on student protesters. So Premier Zhao was open-minded. He visited the U.S. early in 1984, and Ronald Reagan visited China, like in return, like at the invitation for Premier Zhao. Premier Zhao said, we are really at a time of opening up. Officials need to change their mindset and adjust their attitudes towards this like narrow-mindedness of like the company or the university would be dictating the career of its employees, right? We really should like allow free movement of capital and talent. So Premier Zhao gave this general like he didn't comment on this specific case, though the question raised was whether Coca-Cola should be allowed to recruit this someone without the dossier, right, the whole dossier compiled on him. So upon learning Premier Zhao's comment, the university released the dossier, so my friend went over to work at Coca-Cola. So it was just a very small position, very low position, but it took the Prime Minister of China to make a comment before this could take place. So that was how close the society was, even back then, even just 35 years ago.
Well, when one thing I've never really thought about it, but one thing that we've never asked, when someone left like that, he went to work for Coca-Cola, you knew him then, did you get to have any communication with him after that?
He left Coca-Cola for the United States. I met with him in Silicon Valley.
Oh.
And he was Catholic. And then I stayed as a friend with him for quite a few years. And later he went to work at Asia Info, a company in Silicon Valley funded by, I believe, by some Chinese entrepreneurs. Then at one time, he invited me to interview. They were considering investing in search engine. And the Baidu in China, which does a lot of bad things lately, they were thinking about investing in Baidu. So they asked me to evaluate whether Baidu's search engine technology was like really on par. Is competitive, is worth investing. After that, he contracted liver cancer. So he passed away at the beginning of 2000s, I think 2002 or so. The last I communicated with her was via email when I was on an overseas trip to Mexico City on a brief errand business trip to Banco de Mexico. That was when I came back. I wasn't in Silicon Valley. I was in upstate New York back then. He passed away, so I sent condolences to his wife. I didn't stay close in touch with his wife.
Mm. I'm always curious if they suppress that communication coming back. Like if people come here and find out they don't have green faces, are you allowed to, you know, call your friends back home and say, hey, you know, guess what I found out when I was over here? I guess I'm always kind of curious
China
about that
today.
Part.
You mean friends back in China? Today?
Yes. When we come back, tell us about that, especially
sure.
Before we had, you know, really cell phones and email and, you know, easy ways to communicate. I mean, were you allowed to send letters back or, you know, did you ever get news of the outside world? Our guest today is Eureka Young. We're discussing China, and you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Sun beat down, I had the radio on, I was driving, trees went by, me and Dale were singing, Little Runaway.
It ain't much I'm asking, I heard him say, gotta find me a future, move out of my way, I want it all.
why not? So, yeah, if anybody who came here, say, prior to your time period, did you ever hear from those folks again?
Yeah, we did. I did lose contact with them for quite some time before internet was widespread in China, and we had only like postal mails.
Right.
We had long distance telephone calls. In late 1980s, that's when I came here. And international calls were super super expensive. The first minute, there are like midnight hours, which was a little cheaper. It's like below $2 a minute for the first minute, maybe below a dollar for the second minute, from the second minute on. But during business hours, the first minute could cost like $4 or so. The second minute could cost $2.
So nobody was calling back and discussing wider geopolitical issues and concepts.
Right. Yeah, we couldn't afford that.
It's like, and, how are you? I'm fine. Okay, bye.
We rarely make phone calls. And also back in China, not each household had phones.
Oh,
it was a privilege.
A
it was only like party officials with certain rank. They could afford, it was the kind of a privilege that they could have phone calls. And everyday people, it was very hard even to apply for one. So it was only till like most recent 20 or so years cellular phone got popular in China. Now a large population, they're using cellular phones. And it was around 2005 or so, 15 years ago or so, I got back in touch with my high school students, and those who told me about, they said they saw President Reagan on TV, but they couldn't understand a thing. So I got reconnected with those people around 2005, and around 2015, I got in touch with college alumni. There were a lot of college alumni who did come out to the United States, so I stayed in touch with them, but not like many others, and I wasn't in close touch with them. So in the past 5 to 10 years, I got back in touch with them. I did stay in touch with them, but not that close. We have this social media app. We call that WeChat. It is known, and it is rather it's a fairly controversial software. They said it's just like a Huawei equipment.
No, so they're
Huawei
listening.
Telephone. Yeah. They said you'd better not use it. If you leave it on or have it installed, it could like eavesdrop or something. But as far as I know, maybe this WeChat software didn't pull bad tricks like that because it's widely popular and it probably could not afford its market share like worldwide. But tons of other Chinese software, people did the research on it, and they do gather information. And there was one TikTok, I believe, very popular music app.
Oh yeah, that's what the kids are all using today. It's very popular.
Yes, and they are sending privacy, like personal information of underage kids back to China, and it is a huge threat to the safety of kids. And there has been investigation into that app, and so now I'm kind of using this WeChat on and off, but I did get a chance to join a few social groups, my close friends who are not on it. Those are rather outspoken social groups. And from those social groups, I learned what many Chinese people are thinking about, like issues in Hong Kong and issues about Huawei. And recently, nowadays, like because of the high pressure from the central government, a lot of not just average people, everyday people, even officials, aren't very happy with the policy, with the censorship, and with this slowing down of economy, and with this trade conflict with the United States. So last week, there was this news breaking out that Huawei is this giant telecommunication company. Huawei employee tried to get his severance package from Huawei, and he got it, but he was jailed for 251 days. And there was this outpouring sympathy toward this employee, and I learned this from social media groups. People are very much outspoken in support of this Huawei employee. And what is sad is when this Huawei employee eventually freed, and he was exonerated, there was no there's no wrongdoing he committed, because Huawei brought him to the court saying he was trying to blackmailing Huawei for compensation. Then somehow they just kept extending the penalty and kept extending investigation, kept finding out more excuses to keep him in custody. Kept him in custody. When he came out, he had to tweet. They're not allowed to use tweet. He basically had to use social media, another different social media, just equivalent to Twitter here. He had to apologize to the CEO of Huawei, saying that, let me see if I have, I wrote down his exact word, so I want to be accurate. He said, "It wasn't my intention to cause so much attention online, and I'm sorry about it." So basically, he, despite his being put in behind the bar for 250 days, after he was released, he still had to apologize under pressure. So this is how dominating this company is, how this company was treating its former employees, and you think it is, it's just a private company. I think it is much more than a private company, right? So I get to learn about events and public opinion through these social media apps.
Yeah, see, we don't have a clue, but honestly, and just for the folks listening, Huawei is spelled Huawei. So when you hear us talk about it, sometimes people are searching it online, and it's not spelled the way it sounds.
Right.
But
people don't know to look for it.
They don't know to look for it, but once you realize that the Huawei is the Huawei that we've been talking about on and off for months now, all of a sudden people are starting to look at some of their electronic devices and realizing that that's the manufacturer. A lot of the, on eBay, I ordered a watch. I didn't really want it to be a watch. It was a O2 measuring thing. And so I was just going to, measure the oxygen content. It also did your blood pressure and some of that. It was $18. It was just a cheesy, nothing you'd wear all day. And I have no intention of following myself all day, so I don't want to hook that up to the internet.
Yeah, it had GPS and all that.
Yeah, it had all this stuff. But you basically couldn't use the thing unless you logged into it online and set it up. And I didn't even want to use those features. So I get into the directions, which is always just a minefield on deals like that. The directions were bigger than the watch. And so I start reading through, and I kind of cut to the back. Huawei. And I was like, "Oh, it's Huawei." "Goodbye, $18. I threw it in the garbage and watched it drive down the street in the garbage truck. But so they're following somebody else now. But creepy. Just creepy. And not
waste management.
Waste management. Not something to be dismissed, actually.
But it is.
They make a lot of
electronic products that you wouldn't even think of. And they're building in this basically spyware that they can follow you around and take all your personal information.
Something to consider. I was having this conversation last night with a friend, and we were talking about a lot of our younger folks, in their 20s and even 30s, and they think nothing of having, the Alexa, or even, folks that are older and haven't really thought about it. And you have these monitoring devices that you voluntarily put in your house because it's going to make your life easier. And I'm thinking, just go shut the lights off yourself. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Well, I work with a fellow who
let Alexa watch all your stuff.
And he was telling me the other day that his daughter was very upset because the power went out and she couldn't get on TikTok. And I said, "Well, what is TikTok?" And he told me about it. I thought, sounds harmless enough. And then I looked into it, and that is a big deal now. people are starting to realize that that software is going to China, or the information gathering is going to China. So, it's everywhere.
Yeah, and unfortunately, we're, in a lot of cases, voluntarily signing up for that. It's something you really need to consider. I hear from quite a few people, oh, well, they don't care what I'm doing. I'm not doing anything bad.
Nobody wants to know.
I'm not doing anything bad, so why does it matter? And, maybe, Eureka, when we come back, maybe you could give us your thoughts on that.
How about everybody in your contact list? Because that went too.
We have a lot of thoughts on that, but I'd be interested to hear your vantage point, especially where you've been and your history there. We're going to come right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Title that Ode to Huawei.
Ode to Huawei.
I'm just going to change it. Every time we do a show about this kind of stuff, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, the stalker song.
Gotta play that, all the stalker songs. Ugh. So, Eureka, when you, when you talk to people and they, I don't know, maybe they don't tell you this, but I hear it a lot. People say, oh, they're not watching us. And if they were, I'm not doing anything bad.
Actually, it's much more serious than that.
Thank you.
Rarely a month now passes without, like, a case media coverage of a former CIA officer, like, being sentenced for spying for China. So if you dig that out, I studied a few cases. I found out that there is this Social Science Academy of China, and with its affiliated organizations spreading across all the provinces. They were like semi-official and semi kind of like a civilian kind of private organization. And more, they have the facade of like academic like front. They put up this facade, and they were quite active in exchanging scholars and researchers with the United States and with the West in general. And they have been a few cases I noticed, like, their staff would approach former U.S. intelligence officers, and they gathered their information from LinkedIn. So if once they got hold of one guy somehow during his someone who was in financial hardship, they would rather generously giving him a consulting fee and things like that, invite him trips to China, and then imagine his contact list got compromised.
Yeah.
A much wider reach, right? The academy, social right. science academy would be able to reach out to other, former.
And I think that's the part that so many people don't realize is this stuff goes in, gets a hold of your contact list, that automatically gets them in to somebody else's contact list, and it just goes on, and eventually they'll glean some pertinent information. So it's not good.
Yes, especially when someone was under stress, then they would know, his wife was hospitalized, right? Now probably it's like a golden opportunity to reach out to him. So there are all these things. There was in Vice President Mike Pence's speech last October, he mentioned there is this social credit system built in China. Basically, they are monitoring each and every aspect of a person's private and public life. So that would provide like ammunition for them to really breach, to do harm to U.S. national security. So mm-hmm. there is significant implication in that regard.
Yeah. See, and it when you start in with things like that, again, you know, I'm always channeling the naysayers in the back of my mind. I can hear people saying, "What? Well, I haven't done anything wrong." Well, who's setting the standard? I mean, that's where it all goes wrong. Is somebody decides that something that you think is perfectly normal is now unacceptable, and mm-hmm. Now suddenly you. So what happens with the social credit score? Because we've all read things about that. But in real life, what's happening in China with that?
Yeah, from reports that I've heard lately, for someone to... There are checkpoints everywhere, like in airports, in seaports, in high-speed railway stations. And in China has set up a lot of highway checkpoints where, like a toll booth, you have to pay a lot of... They said if you were transporting some goods from southern China to northern China, the cost it's going to cost more than you ship it from China to California.
Wow.
So that's how many toll booths are and how expensive the tolls are. So at each and every such checkpoint, they're going to check your national ID, and if you have nowadays, if you have online like comments, right? If you are pro like Hong Kong people, you're in support of people in Hong Kong who are protesting against their administration, their administrative government. You could be invited to state security offices.
Invited. A little invitation.
Yeah, and whenever the first time you are there, you would be earmarked for, like, scrutiny.
Ew.
So from that point on, it will be hard to go to board a train. It will be hard to go from across the provincial borders. It will be almost next to impossible to go into Beijing, the capital of China. So all these kind of all these records go into the social credit system. It is the same kind of dossier that they had on everyone, like, 35 years ago, only that it is now in electronic system, and it is like instantaneous.
Much easier,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, we're practically handing it to them and not even knowing it.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to go look up paper files, I mean, really, you know, how many people were able to slide through, but now, and if you're carrying a phone, they already know you're there.
Yes, and for the information that... they are gathering. This is just through like we are volunteering the information to the information aggregator. Then there's also this cyber like espionage, right? I wouldn't quote like more conservative publications here, like Fox News. I would quote more like a pro-China camp. I will quote that. I think it is more convincing. I will quote Henry Paulson. He was Secretary of State. He built up a strong personal relationship with leaders of China, and during the credit crisis around 2008 and 2009, he was trying to get financial help, and China did lend a little help back then. So he was on good terms with many Chinese leaders, and after he completed his term, he wrote a memoir. The title of that was Dealing with China, and still he was trying to lower the tension between the two countries. But even so, he admitted that rarely he basically said that there was no executives in any of the Fortune 500 companies that who had not complained to him that their system was breached by Chinese, like by attacks originated from China. So that would include companies like Boeing, right, Lockheed Martin, and would include like government agencies. We saw reports like on Anthem with medical records, with social security numbers, with veteran information. So this is how serious things are.
Wow.
And so, you know, for people in this country who are, you know, taking pictures of every meal they eat and putting it online and every person they've ever met and every thought they've ever had, posting all that online, thinking that that would never be used against them. I don't know if there are still people who believe that, but I look at some of the things people post and it's really, really personal
very, very detailed. Stuff, yeah, you shouldn't be.
Besides
shouldn't
the fact
it's
a huge security issue,
because yeah, it's no different than walking up to a complete stranger on the street and tell
handing
them
your wallet.
Yeah, just hey, yeah, here's my this that my well,
yeah, here's
my
where I live. Here's when I'm when I'm leaving
card
on vacation.
Numbers. Yeah, and I'll be gone these weeks, and come on by.
But how potential? I mean, was there a point in China where people could have kept all this from going online, or was it always kind of a foregone conclusion?
I didn't fully get your question, Aaron, though.
I just look at here in the U.S., people are voluntarily putting all this online. So I guess I'm kind of assuming in China they voluntarily put those things online and then ultimately it came back and worked against them, but maybe that's not how it happened.
Not yet, unless you discuss sensitive issues like Hong Kong. Even the word Hong Kong is now like if you key in that word, then there's even the screening has all been automated thanks to this this big data, right? And thanks to like cloud computing.
Sure.
As long as you do not like participate in discussion like that, people there were live very lively communities. People are discussing about like fashion, this about the food, the gourmet, and all that.
We're gonna come right back. Thank you for staying with us in the second hour. We're gonna come back and start right here. Our guest is Eureka Young. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be right back.